Tonight's gospel passage holds a fairly hideous fascination for someone like me. I've always been told I'm pretty smart, and I've studied theology. And in the reading from Matthew, though, Jesus says that God has hidden many things from the intelligent and the wise, and instead revealed them to children. It's a bit of a reminder that cleverness is not the be-all and end-all, and that God's wisdom may often look foolish to our minds. But of course, it makes me very nervous about preaching. So rather than engage in our proper sermon in a big theological exposition, which unravels a text using all the tools I was taught at theological college, I'll instead talk a bit about my own journey, particularly as a member of this church, and how I think it relates to this passage. And here I should add that I see my church participation as pretty much the primary expression of faith. I've been very influenced by Elizabeth O'Connor, an American theologian and writer, who argues that the first work of the Christian is to participate in the formation of the church. In fact, she describes it as the only task, because in it, in that activity, we find our ultimate meaning. She argues that we're not looking for something which happens in the future. Instead, being involved in the church right now is what forms us as human beings and what teaches us to live in a new way. So that's kind of my background. But like Jesus' words, O'Connor's words too have a fairly awful fascination to me because I hate joining things. I hate being part of groups. And at a fairly pathetic level, I have to admit, I think I'm a little too good to be linked with a bunch of strangers in a Christian community. It's not very cool. I've been told way too many times how fantastically gifted I am, and there often seems to be very little use for that in the church. So there's this voice that tells me that I can be wasted here, I'm wasting my time, and I should be out doing amazing things with important people somewhere else. It could be a coffee house in New York or a conference in London, somewhere important, I could be important too. I think, obviously, that's a myth, and that is one of my myths. But I also know that turning up to church here week after week, month after month, and year after year, I think 8 years now, is a primary discipline that has helped me grow up. And it's the one thing that has really enabled me to articulate what my gifts actually are. So what do I do with this conflict within myself? Well, going back to tonight's text, after putting Miss Clever Pants back in her place, Jesus invites her to link up with him, and he says that his yoke is easy. And we often hear preachers suggesting this means we can pretty much put our feet up and rest. And I think our paraphrase has words pretty much to that effect, but I don't really buy that. The bullock driver doesn't go to all the effort of harnessing the animals if to have them sit round the barn all day. What I hear instead is a call to work, but not to the sort of work that seems important to me and not to the work that seems important to the world. Instead, we're invited to engage in the work that Jesus thinks is important, the work that Jesus has called us to. And I've been thinking a great deal, I've thought over the years a great deal about what that might be. And for me personally, since I've been part of this congregation, I've very slowly identified that I'm a writer, by which I suppose I mean I can weave words together with relative ease and have a bit of fun with it. And a dominant myth, I think, in our society is that our profession is what forms our primary identity. And this can be especially true for a writer. When you read a writer's manual, they usually say, in effect, that the writing is more important than anything else. If you're a serious writer, a real writer, your life has to fit around the writing. And this may mean not having children or choosing just to have one so your life isn't disrupted too much. And this may mean holing up and writing for hours and hours every day. It may mean sacrificing a marriage or other significant relationships if they get in the way of the craft. And maybe this is true if you're going to write great works of literature. I don't know, because I haven't written them yet. But in our society, I think our profession is understood to be the same thing as vocation, by which I mean the calling, whether it's secular or religious, our calling. And it can be especially true of any form of artist, and the two words are often used interchangeably, even by Christians. But in my life, I find myself living a paradox. On the one hand, it's through living out the Christian faith that I have found myself becoming a writer. And on the other, by following God's call in all its myriad aspects, I find myself feeling compromised in many attempts to write. I think this is because the work that Jesus calls me to only sometimes looks like writing. Sure, I do write. I have a couple of blogs and I write for various publications. And I do try really hard to infuse a sense of the holiness of the everyday into most things that I write. And when I manage it, it feels like I'm doing something good. And yet I'm often called to do work that doesn't look like writing at all. Work which in fact seems to detract from the activity of writing. I felt very deeply called to have children, not one but three. And I've no doubt that it was the right thing to do for me and our family and our church and in a whole variety of ways. But trying to write with three children in the house is absolutely infuriating. Writing is a slow, contemplative, solitary behaviour. It requires a sharp and rested mind. And children are messy, noisy beings who require frequent and immediate attention and often in the middle of the night. So solitude and rest, two things I think a writer most needs, are very rarely to be found in my house. As well, I feel called to be part of church life, as I explained before. Belonging to any community, any group of people, involves commitment and work. And here, most of you know, I do the notice sheet and I do the kids' sheets and I pick up lots of other things. I don't mind the work. In fact, I enjoy quite a lot of it. But any writer's manual would have hysterics at the precious hours of solitude that I do have. I spend every week doing church work. I feel too that being part of a church is often hard work emotionally. Not only do I have to turn up when I'm feeling in a foul mood or exhausted or just plain bored, but I have to work to resolve conflict and engage with all sorts of people, and most of you will know that quite personally. And as you all know, as we all know, it's difficult to form community and to make it last. You know, getting along with one another and learning to love one another is hard. It's just hard work. It's a work of long commitment, of showing up again and again and again, of biting one's tongue and saying one is sorry when one really stuffs up. And at this church, I sometimes think it feels especially difficult. Because we live far away from each other, we don't often bump into each other and have those spontaneous conversations which can be so life-giving. We're all different ages. There's no big peer group I can just slot into and pretend that all these cool people are just affirming me and that's church. Instead, I and all of us have to engage with everyone, not just the easy people, and have to work on these relationships. It's not to say that relationships aren't often very enjoyable, but they're certainly not always easy. So most of these efforts, the conversations, the conflict resolution, the kids' activities, the notice sheet, my child raising, my laundry and the floors, don't look much like work in the eyes of the world. I don't think anyone would call them my profession, and few would understand that they can be part of my vocation. But they all arise out of invitations I've experienced at times of prayer. At my core, I have no doubt that they, along with the writing, constitute the work I'm called to do. Even so, the lack of cohesion or the lack of a dignified title can make me resentful. And when I'm feeling resentful, I think that's when I need to hear the second part of Jesus' call. Not only am I called to do his work, but he says that his work will suit me and the burden will be light. It's an invitation to joy, an invitation to find the work that leads to growth and maturity and delight in life. And there are times that I think I want a bit of acclaim as a writer. I dream of being a lonely artist, quite romantic, making it in a big city. However, actually, as most of you also know, I'm a very fragile person with all sorts of tendencies towards compulsive behaviour and depression and self-hate. Loneliness and stress, which loom very large in the highly stylized writer's life, are, for someone like me, doors to a downward spiral, the sort of spiral which results not in great works of literature, but in self-loathing and the complete crumbling of any ability or desire to write or even get out of bed. So what I actually need, that is what suits me and has matured me and made me into someone with enough resilience and courage to begin to write, are the stability of a good marriage and my loving children, the regular demands of our family life, the steadiness of this church community, the practice of doing small jobs for others with faithfulness and humility, and the understanding that this stuff is important too. Not just the glamour stuff, but this stuff is important. And staying true to these disciplines, as I see them, is part of my calling as I follow the way of Jesus Christ. And engaging them has eased my burden considerably. Looking back at the disparate aspects of my vocation, I sense that they've had a real refining effect. The last decade has taught me all sorts of lessons about patience and humility, faithfulness and kindness, gentleness, hospitality and forgiveness. I still have a great deal to learn, probably like all of us, But I can see, and those who know me well can see too, that's been a huge shift. I'm no longer the churned up and largely furious person I once was. Those elements are certainly still with me, but they're not dominating me anymore, and for this I'm deeply grateful. So in a nutshell, my conclusion is that responding to the invitation of Jesus to take on his yoke does involve work. It may not be the sort of stuff that we think of as work, and it may not lead to great respect or to professional fulfilment or to any of the other rewards that we often think we should receive in return for our labour. In fact, there may be times when the work of Jesus feels absolutely tedious, like a bullock walking circles in a mill pit. But Jesus never promised that we'd be ploughing fields with nice views or that we'd see the fruit of our labour. Perhaps our job is just to grind away sometimes. It doesn't really matter. I think what does matter is that this work, this acceptance of a yoke that for me at least means a quiet and largely invisible life, which is built around relationships and not professional acclaim, is slowly turning my heart of stone into one of flesh. The sort of flesh that can experience not only hurt and anger, but also fairly wildly soaring joy. I used to experience life with a heavy heart. I experienced it as a sort of enforced long march, something I just had to get through. And now I find myself strolling along with a much more powerful sense of hope. Accepting Jesus' yoke and its various disciplines has certainly led to my burden being lightened indeed. And that, of course, is something which is worth writing about.